Welcome to First Things First, the weekly podcast where we talk about God, faith, and life in Shallow Water, Texas. Our podcast is a production of First Shallow Water, and you can find more information about our church by clicking on the link in the description of this episode. Thanks for joining us. Here's our pastor, Brad Miles.
Well, welcome, friends, to the First Things First podcast. Every week on the First Things First podcast, we have exciting and interesting guests who tell us about their life and kind of talk about what God has been doing in their life. And they're folks that you know, they're your neighbors, they're your friends, they're your co-laborers in the gospel here at First Baptist Church Shallow Water. And this week, I'm really excited to have this conversation with my friend, Denise Laverty, my good friend, Denise. Denise has been a member of our church for a while, serves faithfully in our church in a lot of different places. Children's ministry, one of those places, right? You plug in there, and she and her husband, Trey, also are leaders of a small group that meets at your house. So a grow group that meets at their house. So so they and also on our baptism team, Denise and Trey make sure that the baptistry has water in it and that there are towels.
And not on the stage.
Yeah, and not on the stage. We're not gonna name any names, but somebody didn't check the little valve on the drain the last time we filled up the baptistry and flooded the stage. I'm not going to say who it was, but their name starts with Brad. So, yes. So the good thing is the Laverty's keep me from absolutely destroying our worship center with the water. So, but yeah, lots of different ways that Denise is involved and plugged in and serving our church, and a lot of wonderful reasons for all you folks out there in podcast land to get to know Denise. So Denise, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself? What do folks need to know? What's the essential Denise?
Oh, thanks so much for having me today, Brad.
Yeah.
My husband Trey and I moved out to Shallow Water in 2013, so we've been here for 9 years.
Man, all right.
We moved at the end of my pharmacy school career. We did undergrad in Lubbock. We'd moved to Amarillo so I could go to pharmacy school.
Yeah.
Weren't sure where we were going to lay down roots, and kind of at the very end, God pulled some things together and showed us that Lubbock was where we were supposed to be. And really just pulled everything together so perfectly. Actually, when we were looking to move to Shallow Water, we thought we might rent in Lubbock first.
Yeah.
It was a nightmare. So on a whim, we called Misty Brashear, who is Tony Cotton's daughter, and said, I don't know what we're going to do, but there are some houses in Shallow Water for sale. Can you show us tomorrow? Because we need to move in 3 weeks and we don't know what we're going to do.
Yeah.
So we moved out here 9 years ago, bought a home that Tony Cotton had built. When we moved out here, Kinsley, our daughter, was 6 months old.
Wow.
She's going into fifth grade next year.
Wow.
And the house that we bought was the house that we bought our five-year-old Reed home to. So lots of special memories. We've really been here for a while. You know, we're still the new guys, but as more and more new people move in, we're kind of the
You're starting to be the old people. Yeah. So, and that's awesome because you guys have really built your life out here. I mean, you know, your kids have been raised out here their whole time. So this is home for you guys in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
That's awesome. That's really cool. And so, so you're a pharmacist then? Is that what you, what do you do for a living? You have pharmacy training. So, but tell me what you do for a living.
My official title is a quality and integration pharmacist at UMC. So I do a lot of finance and contract review for the pharmacy at the hospital. I play an integral part with making sure IT build works for pharmacy, that our medication orders don't kill patients.
Yes, right. That's a little kind of important.
And match the meds that we need to dispense and things like that. So I have a really, really cool, unique pharmacist role that's not really a super traditional pharmacist.
Right, yeah. It's kind of an administrative role or supervisory role, maybe.
It is,
kind of overseeing role. Yeah. So, all right, and when you came in today, you were telling me that you love spreadsheets. Is that right?
Do
you
have much.
So, for those of you listening, when she said that to me, I told her that she was a weirdo. So, because I don't get the spreadsheet thing at all, but you really do love them. You genuinely love working with spreadsheets.
Yes. My computer kept freezing this morning. I've got a 300,000 row document that I'm trying to find duplicates in. And Excel was like, not working. But we finally got it. Maybe the issue fixed.
300,000 rows.
Yes.
Of data. Oh my gosh, that's unbelievable. That's a lot of data. And you love doing that.
I love it. That's how many meds the pharmacy has dispensed in the past month. And I'm trying to make sure that they're going to the right accounts.
In a month, 300,000 rows.
Yep.
Wow. Okay. Well, all right. So people like Denise make the world go round, y'all. So that's you're the reason why people don't die at the hospital. So we're grateful that you love spreadsheets. That's awesome. So usually, like on the podcast, the whole goal of this is just to get to know people, right? The reason we started the podcast is because I was like, what an awesome way for us to get to know folks, you know, in our church that we see every day, get to know one another better, and also just kind of hear about what God's doing in the lives of people that we know, you know? So I thought usually I just, you know, want to hear people kind of share their story, and particularly maybe the story of how they came to faith, right? Like how the point in their life where they decided that they wanted to surrender their heart and their life to Christ. But I know for you that there's a long journey to actually get to that point. So is that right? Tell us your story, Denise. Start at the very beginning. Tell us the story.
So I used to joke in adolescence that I was going to one of these days grow up and sell my story to Lifetime. So maybe this is you're my big break,
this
Brad.
This is the Lifetime story moment. That's good.
So when I was born, my biological mom was 16 and my dad was 18.
Okay.
My dad did not know that my mom was pregnant. She had moved on. They weren't in a relationship any longer.
Right. Were they both in high school at the same at that time?
They were.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. So two high school kids.
Yes.
Okay. Yep. All right.
My mom came from a family where at the time she really didn't have support. Right. You know, it's something I've learned now as an adult. It's kind of shaped how I've thought of that time, I guess, that she really lived a really, really hard life, a 16-year-old that was pregnant and didn't have support. So time came for her to give birth, and she labored and gave birth to me in an apartment unassisted.
Wow. Did anybody know she was pregnant? I know your dad didn't know. I believe
her mom did, but okay. I'm not really sure. So she bound herself through her pregnancy, which she tied a rope, wore a belt to try to conceal. So of the people that knew, it was very few and probably would have been limited to her mom.
Okay.
So she labored and gave birth.
In an apartment by herself,
mm-hmm.
as a 16-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And she then left me in an abandoned vehicle, essentially, at a nursing home in Plainview, Texas.
Okay, so she just walked over to a nursing home after giving birth,
mm-hmm.
with her newborn baby and stuck you in a car.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. When was this? Like, what time of year are we talking about?
So December of 1986, during a blizzard.
Okay.
And the vehicle was owned by an elderly man who typically didn't drive maybe once a month. He had no reason to go to his vehicle. And from what I've been told, he just felt the strange pull that I've got to go. I don't know where I'm going to go, but I just got to go for a drive.
So he didn't even have a place where he was going.
No.
He just felt like he needed to go get in his car and drive someplace in the middle of a blizzard.
Right.
Wow. Okay. So he goes out to his car. All right. Tell
and
the story.
Clearly he finds me, right? A baby. Right. So he takes me to the hospital in Plainview. And it takes some time, a couple of days, but my biological mom came forward and claimed me, and then they linked me to my dad.
Okay.
So
have you thought about like what the thought process for your mom was at that moment when she's making this decision that she's going to leave you in this car? Like, have you thought about what was going on in her head at that moment?
I have, yeah. I just really... Honestly, where I'm at in my life now, my heart breaks for her.
Right.
What a sad, sad, she's 16.
Right.
Has no support.
Yeah.
She was clearly in a sad, sad spot.
Right. Yeah. And you know, she couldn't have been thinking about like the ramifications of this, right? I mean, she just clearly was just, I'm going to leave my baby here, but she couldn't have been thinking, you know, what happens 6 hours from now, if no one finds the baby. Like she couldn't have been processing all that. She was just like, I don't know what to do. I'm going to put my baby here.
Right.
Out of the weather, you know, just, this seems like a safe place. I'm going to stick her here.
Yep.
Wow. 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 So that was like, I mean, that was just within hours of you being born.
Right.
Man. Okay. So she steps forward and then, so they know who the dad is, mm-hmm. then at that point. So what happened? Where did you end up? How did this...
So my paternal grandparents, my dad's parents, were on a vacation. My great grandfather, so my dad's grandfather, we fondly called him Crazy Harold.
I've got a crazy aunt, so I know all about that.
He was a really, really great man, but he was in charge of my grandparents as kids while they were on vacation. And his first instinct was, oh man, Dennis had a baby. Now they've got to get married, right? Because that's what you did in the 80s.
Yes.
You had a baby out of wedlock, you got married.
Got married, yeah.
So my grandparents came home from vacation to their 18-year-old son married to a 16-year-old girl.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. So Crazy Harold, he didn't call your grandparents.
No.
To let them know what was going on. They just got back and he was like, oh, by the way, wow.
And that was really how most things happened in his life.
Okay.
Like, oh, you did this crazy thing. And, oh, just by the way, it's no big deal.
I love those kind of people, by the way. But yes.
So with all of that, I guess going on the tragedy that had happened to me, I'd been left. Yeah. And I could not be released to my mom. So I went into foster care for 6 months.
Sure.
With some really good people that live 10 miles from where I grew up.
Wow.
My aunt has a really great relationship with them. So I was really lucky, had a really good foster family that my family was able to connect with and still have a relationship with me. And then at 6 months, I was able to leave foster care and go live with my mom and my dad.
Okay.
And when I turned a year old, my mom left.
Okay.
And that was the last time I ever saw her.
Yeah. I mean, this whole situation had to have just been, I mean, I can't even imagine. So she went from pregnant, desperate, not knowing what to do, to married, probably somebody that she didn't even want to be with, had already decided that they weren't going to be together, right? And then, so she just bailed after about a year.
And we're still at this point, we're talking about a 17-year-old, right?
So right, yeah.
We're still talking about a
just
child.
Just a kid.
Yeah.
Just a kid, yeah. A kid who's grown up in really awful circumstance, difficult circumstance, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So she left when I was a year, and my dad raised me on his own for the next year. And when I was two, he enlisted in the Army.
Okay.
So when he did that, since he was a single parent, he had to turn custody of me over to somebody. He chose his parents.
Okay. And so he's 19, mm-hmm. maybe 20 at this point.
Right.
Okay. So, and he, just trying to make a decision about how he's going to have a future, you know what I mean?
Right.
So he joins the Army. You become custody of your grandparents,
right? Okay. His parents specifically.
Okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So he came back when I was four. He enrolled in college, met a woman.
Yeah.
Got married. I grew up in Hart with my grandparents. That's where they live. He kind of floated back and forth. He was in Hart some. They moved around a little bit. When they were in Hart, I would stay with my dad and his wife some, with my grandparents some, and kind of flip-flop back and forth.
Right.
And then when my dad moved away, there was a little bit of disagreement between him and my grandparents. They felt like they could provide a better environment, a better living situation. So they fought for me and kept me. And I was raised from there on out by my grandparents.
Yeah. So, I mean, and clearly at this point, like, they've had you in their lives and they, you know, they've formed a connection with you and they, you know, and he was gone.
Yeah.
Like, he wasn't around for a couple of years, probably.
Right. Yep. He was, you know, in the Army. And then when he came back, he still kind of left and went to college and spent that time away.
I mean, you're in for 4 years, right? So
he just did two. He did the reserve. So he was in for two, came back and did junior college in Clarendon. So that was still a ways away.
Yeah.
So really, they were my sole providers.
Yeah.
Even when he had come back, they were still my sole providers. They were the ones that were making sure all of my daily needs were met.
Right.
So they chose me.
Yeah.
Very much chose me. They had three children of their own. Zachary was six when I was born. They could have been like, nope, we are done. We are on the home stretch. We don't need a baby.
Right.
But they chose me.
Wow. So you grew up with your grandparents
mm-hmm.
as your parents, but you knew all this story. Like none of this was kept from you. Like you knew this whole story.
Yep. And my dad was still very much who I thought of as my dad.
Sure.
Looked forward to like visits with him. I got to see him, you know, for a week in the summer. He came home for Christmas. And so my grandparents are Mimi and Doodad. And then my dad was who I called dad.
Yeah. Mimi and Doodad.
Yep.
That's good. I'm at the point right now where I'm, you know, my oldest daughter's 21. She's been dating the same guy for 2 years. I mean, I can read the writing on the wall, Denise. Okay. I know. I know that, you know, engagement is probably coming. Okay. So I feel like I'm closer to like grandparent time, you know, so I've had to start thinking about, you know, what do I want to be called? And that's a complicated thought process. I just want you to know, like, because the thought of being a granddad still, you know, I'm sure I'm going to love having grandkids, but I don't know that I feel like a granddad yet. So I'm still trying to figure all that out. But yeah, Mimi and Doodad. I'm going to keep those in my brain. And Doodad, maybe that's an option.
It's really great until the 3-year-old decides it's Doodad.
Yes,
and he did not like that.
Yeah, he didn't like Doodad. All right, I get that. Yeah, but when I was a baby, my grandmother wanted to be called Granny, but I say Grandi, and her Hispanic coworkers gave her a really hard time about that because she thought they were like, your grandkids calling you large, you know? So anyway, so I had to change it. So it became Meemaw, the opposite of whatever, you know? So anyway,
yep.
All right. So you grew up with them. So talk a little bit about then how, you know, I mean, how did these things kind of impact you and shape you as you were growing up, and how did it shape your you know, the story of your faith, coming to faith in Christ? Like, what was that all? What did that all look like?
So I was really, really lucky. So not only did I have grandparents that chose me, but the town that I was raised in, Hart, is a pretty small community.
Yeah, it's tiny.
With a really, really phenomenal church body at First Baptist. Yeah. And so not only was I raised by grandparents who chose me, but I was surrounded by a community of people who absolutely loved me, who knew my story, and every chance they got, did their best to build me up and to pour into me.
Wow.
So a little bit later, so I was raised by my grandparents, like I'd mentioned. Right. My dad lived in Hart. Sometimes he lived off, kind of fluctuated, floated around. And then when I was 12, he had moved back to Hart. Mm-hmm. He was living on the family farm, and he passed away.
Oh, no.
When I was 12, yeah. He was 29.
He was 29.
They told us at the time that he had committed suicide, which is a really, really tragic thing for anybody that's experienced loss to be told about their loved one.
Right.
And even more so. So my grandparents then flipped into a state where they had lost a child, which is the hardest grief anybody can go through. And it was their anniversary.
Oh, that's when they found out.
That's when they found out, yep. So my grandfather had went, my dad didn't show up for work, so my grandfather went by his house and tried to get him to wake up and just had a really bad feeling. They had a phenomenal, their best friends at the time was our pastor. And so my grandfather just had a really bad feeling, called our pastor. Our pastor met him out at the farm, and they were able to break into the house, and my grandfather found him. And so that was, before then, I grew up in the church. You know, there's that joke, I was drugged to church, we were at church. For Sunday school, for church, we had Sunday night church, we had Wednesday night youth.
Right.
Anytime there was anything at the church, we were there.
Yeah.
The whole family. So pretty traditional salvation story. I went to church camp, felt the Lord move. And it still was a very real experience. I was about 8-9 years old.
Right.
And very clearly felt the Lord move and say, I am like your Lord and your Savior. I went forward at church camp and I got baptized shortly after.
Yeah.
But really, you know, I experienced all this tragedy, if you will, early on. You know, I don't remember that. I don't remember being left in a pickup. I don't remember being in foster care. None of that is in my memory. But what is in my memory and the grief that was so real is when I lost my dad.
Yeah.
And when everybody around me was buried in their own grief too, right? So my grandparents had the grief of losing their son. My aunt and uncle, who were very much like my brother and sister. So I'd mentioned Zach was 6 years older than me. Shelly was 14 years older than me. And they were very much like my brother and sister. They had lost their brother tragically, you know, suddenly. And that was a hard, hard loss where I really, a lot of times, felt alone. Mm. And I struggled. There were some instances where I kind of acted out at school. And school had been easy for me. And it wasn't after that. And I had an educator that pulled me and my grandma aside and helped us get some counseling for me. And that was super helpful.
Yeah.
The next year I went into junior high and I was able to just get involved in sports and throw myself into activities. And that was phenomenal just to keep myself busy, ways to lift me up, and really was around a church family and educators in our school system that were just solid rocks for me. Like I had cheerleaders everywhere I turned. Everybody around me poured into me and built me up.
Yeah. Gosh, that's such an awesome, I love to hear that story of the church being the church, right? Because that's who we're supposed to be, is the body of Christ. You know, we're supposed to, you know, we're supposed to do that for one another, you know? And, And a lot of times we hear stories of the church being like a toxic or a harmful place, you know, which, you know, my experience of the church has not been that, you know, most of my life. It's been, you know, really a place of life for me. And so I love to hear people tell that story. And I'll tell you what, doing this podcast, talking to people who grew up in this church and talking about how this church was like that for them has been really cool too. But these little communities, like these little West Texas communities, they're special places,
you know,
because there really is that tight knit feeling, and we take care of one another, and we love each other. That's why this is my favorite place in the world. I love this part of the world, you know, so much. So your dad passed away when you were 12, and that's a shattering experience for you in mm-hmm. a lot of ways, right? So you had become a Christian when you were younger, but then I'm guessing that was a moment where your faith was really tested, and maybe you kind of like wandered around in the wilderness for a little while trying to figure yourself out after something like that happened. Is that accurate?
Yeah, and really I struggled with identity.
Yeah.
Who am I? Whose am I? Where do I belong? And where do I, you know, focus my time? Mm-hmm. How do I... Really, whose am I?
Yeah.
But God was so, so good. And just providing the community that built me up.
Yeah. Yeah.
And stood beside me.
And so you had these people all the time who were reminding you of whose you were and who God had created you to be.
Yep. And if I ever needed a place to escape, right? We always... Teenagers need a place to go, need a place that's home. Sometimes it's not their own home.
Right.
And one of my very best friends from childhood actually lives a block over from me. Nice. And I spent a lot of time at Kyle's house. His mom cooked me dinner. We watched every episode of Friends in his basement. And if we weren't at Kyle's house, we were at Trent's house, and his mom made the best chocolate chip cookies and just
that's good therapy.
Had all these mamas looking out for me.
Chocolate chip cookies and friends.
Yeah.
That's, you know, that's, that'll help you get through a lot of stuff right there for sure. So, so your dad was, you mentioned that they told you that it was suicide. Was that what it was? Was it an overdose?
It was not. They thought initially that it was an overdose.
Okay.
Is what they thought. And then once we got the autopsy report back, it was untreated high blood pressure.
Wow.
Which
at 29.
At 29, I think. Honestly, that almost weighed heavier on my grandmother because it was preventable.
Yeah.
And it was something that he had ignored and just said, it'll be fine. I'll be fine. And at 29, he passed away.
Wow. So yeah, he must have known that he had that issue from the military and stuff. Like it must have popped up on his medical screen.
He did. And he had prescriptions for meds, but at that time, the medication they wanted to prescribe was not, you know, he was in a time in his life where $20 or $30 a month was life-changing.
Right.
And so he had made choices not to buy those. My grandmother wanted to buy them for him, but then that's an awkward situation and one that he never really let play out.
Yeah. I remember I have asthma pretty bad. And so I remember when they came out with Singulair, which, you know, when it came out, like was life-changing. Like I'd never breathed that way before when I started taking that, you know, but it was like $50 a month for me to get it. And so there were a lot of times where I would just be like, I'm sorry, I can't do it.
Right.
And I would go without it. And even though that meant that I was breathing really bad and having all kinds of asthma trouble, I just felt like I couldn't spend the money. That's a lot of money for when you're young, you know?
Right.
And I was young and married and, you know, having a family, and it was hard to come up with that. So I get that. So was there, do you remember any specific instances or any things that happened in those years kind of after that where, you know, that helped you kind of understand who you were to the Lord? You know what I mean? Was there anything specific happen, or was it just kind of an amalgamation of all these?
I'd say really in high school, college, and even pharmacy school, for so long, I just focused on school.
Yeah.
And I, you know, when Trey and I came to college, we didn't plug into a church. His dad's a pastor.
Yeah.
We did not plug into a church. I worked full time. So that meant I worked every weekend so I could go to school, during the week.
Right.
When we moved to pharmacy school in Amarillo, we kind of decided, man, you know, we probably, we're going to have kids one of these days and we want them to be raised in the church.
Yeah.
And I'm very introverted. When you tell me to shake people's hands in church, yeah, I just about bolt out the back door.
Yeah. So like when we started doing that again, cause we hadn't been doing it for COVID for a long reason. So the first Sunday that we did it, like I remember telling Roxanne for that we were going to do it. She literally jumped up in the air and clicked her heels. Yes. Right. So, and so I know there are people like that at our church. And then there's people like you, who are like, oh no, we've got to do this again. Yeah. So introvert.
Yes. Yeah. So we, yeah, Excel spreadsheets, introvert. Yeah. It all goes together. So we decided, man, we really need to get back into church.
Yeah.
But we wanted to blend in, right?
Yes.
We knew community mattered, but we didn't want it at that time. Yeah. So we were in Amarillo and we started going to Hillside Christian Church. And it was a wonderful church.
Sure.
Moving, right? You'd go to church and it was like church camp all over again.
Yeah.
And we could be 100% anonymous.
Anonymous. Yeah.
And we loved it. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of dipping our toes kind of in the water, getting back into church. And then we decided, man, we really do want to have kids and they need more than this. We want them in Sunday school. We want them to have activities. So we kind of started church shopping. That was when God very clearly showed us Amarillo is not where you're going to be. We weren't really sure where we were going to be.
Right.
And he opened doors in Lubbock that we couldn't have ever opened ourselves. Like Trey was essentially recruited.
Yeah.
They had asked when he could start, like it lined up. I was still in school. I was in my last year. I had rotations. We had a 6-month-old baby.
Yeah.
All these things to overcome. Trey was recruited by this great job. It lined up where he was able to give 6 weeks at his current job. That got me through a hard rotation. We were able to list our house. It sold. We closed on it the last day of rotation in Amarillo. Wow.
That's awesome.
And I told you we'd bought a house that Tony Cotton had built here. We closed on that the week after.
Wow.
Trey accepted a job that he's still in today. So
yeah.
10 years later, it's been a great job for him.
Yeah.
And he very clearly, I felt like when we were looking for houses in Lubbock, he shut every single door.
Right.
And he clearly opened the door in shallow water so that we could jump back into community.
Yeah.
So we moved out here and we were still kind of alone.
Right.
So we had a 6-month-old baby. Mm. We brought her to nursery, but to make relationships, you have to put effort into relationships.
Yes, you do. Yeah.
And I, especially at that time, was not good at it. I had a 6-month-old baby. I was trying to graduate from school.
Yeah.
Starting a new career. So we thought people would flock to us and they did not.
Yes. Yeah.
So we were members out here for where we came. I guess we weren't really members, but we came to church when we were able to, and didn't join until a little bit later. But in the fall of 2016, some people that we had known, we kind of met through Sunday school, kind of had a relationship with, but we didn't really ever get truly plugged in. We came to Sunday school. We sat in the back corner. We didn't make friends. We didn't have a community. We were members at that time, but just weren't really plugged in.
Yeah.
And this person, Megan Henderson, decided, hey, we were at this church in Plainview. We did this thing called Life Group. I think we're going to start it here.
Yeah.
What do you think? Do you think y'all would want to come? I was like, oh, I don't know. I don't know if I want to come to your house. That's kind of a lot for me. I don't know if I can even shake your hand on Sunday morning, but now you want me to come to your house.
Yeah, yeah.
And at the time, Clinton Lowen was our interim.
Oh, yeah.
And he wrote our lesson plans, and they were phenomenal. And so we joined this life group, and we had like 30 people that came.
Wow.
And we felt community like we had never felt before.
Yeah.
And like God tied all the pieces in to show me and to allow me to appreciate everything I had growing up. Because still as a teenager, you know, I didn't ever appreciate. Like I can say now, gosh, these people raised me up. They lifted me up. They supported me. They provided for me. And I kind of saw that, but not with the appreciation and the realization that I have now for all that they did.
Right. Yeah. Is there something about, you know, as we get older, we are able, because we understand we're actually giving the sacrifice like that to our kids. You know, we're actually doing that. So then it reminds us, oh, wow. I mean, these people were going over and above, you know, for me all this time when I was growing up. So, yeah. Have you had a chance to have some of those conversations with those folks and just thank them for being a part of your life? Like, have you been able to do some of that?
I'm not very good at that. The introvert in the back corner. Thank you so much.
Yeah, that's good. Well, okay, so maybe some of those folks are listening to the podcast. So why don't you talk about some of those people that really meant a lot to you?
So I've mentioned the people that cooked the chocolate chip cookies. That's Brad and Karen Barnes.
Okay, yeah.
And Gail Johnson was Kyle's mom, and she's phenomenal. She's an angel on earth. Kyle is married to Jan and Sandy's daughter, Jenna.
Oh, yeah. That's who that is. Yeah. Okay.
And I love that they live a block away, and I still get to, you know, Kyle will be my friend. Jenna's just a bonus, and she's absolutely precious. I love Jenna.
Yeah.
And as a bonus, I still get to see Kyle's mom, Gail, frequently, you know, at birthday parties and just walking.
Yeah.
She'll be out here. That's awesome. That's really great. Letha and Albert Key, Gilia Davis. So when we had Sunday school growing up, and this lady named Gilia, she was our organist. She had been the organist since she was like 14 in the church.
Right.
You know, in my childhood, she's in her 60s, 70s. And so she played the piano for all of the kids' Sunday school classes before they had their lesson.
Right.
And I sang loudly.
All right.
And Gilia got very sick probably when I was in college, pharmacy school. And so I went to visit her in the hospital kind of in her last days. And she's not super lucid, but she said, "Oh, Denise, I just adore you. You always sang so joyfully."
Yeah,
joyfully. And what that means is you did not sing good at all, but you were always so loud that I could hear you.
I'm going to remember that. You sing so joyfully. That's a good, because you wonder what to say to people. That's good.
Yes, joyfully.
Joyfully. I like that. I like that.
Sandy Ferris. So she was one of my friend's moms as well. And Gayla Myrick, they were the moms that were always on the trips, the ski trips. They were the moms that made it happen too, right? Because we didn't have staff. We had a preacher. Yeah. And everything else in our little community church was volunteer led.
Right.
And so we had this whole band of people making these things happen. Mm. The ski trips we did, they were our church camp sponsors. They took us to Six Flags in the summer. Those were my vacations growing up. Yeah. Right. I went on like one other vacation outside of the church.
Wow. That's awesome.
So all of my really fun, at like every fun memory I had growing up with my friends was because of the church.
Because of church.
And because of all of those people working behind the scenes to make that happen.
Yeah, that's so cool. Yeah, that's awesome. So it sounds like that faith community, I mean, it was like a launching pad then for you. So, because you're in that and it's that kind of those experiences that then make you think, oh yeah, I mean, I can go to college and I can go to pharmacy school. I mean, you know, a lot of folks, Denise, who've been kind of through some of the stuff that you've been through, you know, they wouldn't have thought about college as an option or pharmacy school as an option, or you know what I'm saying?
So my junior year of high school, in between my junior and senior year, so school was admittedly easy for me.
Yeah.
I was very, very successful, even back in high school. And so I'd gotten invited to go to a leadership symposium in Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
We didn't have cool stuff. We didn't have eighth grade trips to Washington, D.C. So this was like a big deal.
Yeah.
But my family on our own, there's not a chance we could have afforded it. So we had to pay for the program itself. We got to stay at Georgetown University, tour the Capitol, senators and political heads came in and talked to us, and it was a week long event. Had to fly on a plane.
Wow.
Had to buy airfare and then also had to buy professional clothes for the whole week that I was there.
Right.
So the total cost of this trip, I'm sure, was in the thousands. I don't know.
Yeah.
But, my grandparents said, you know, if you want to go, we are going to find a way. And so they just told friends in the church and Brad, every bit that I needed to go was covered within a week. Every single bit. They wrote out checks. They gave, not only did they lift me up and were they cheerleaders, they gave freely.
Yeah. When it came right down to it, they were there to provide for you.
And that was really, an incredible moment because I got to see the world. I got to see things outside of my small community. And that was really a launching pad too, to say, man, I want this. I want the world.
Right. Man, that's so cool. I love that. Man, that, what a great story. So how'd you meet Trey? When did that dude come strolling into your life?
So the church camp that we were so blessed to go to was Plains Baptist in Floydada, where it's like 110 with rattlesnakes. And so Trey and I met at Plains Baptist, and I was 14 and he was 15.
Oh, wow. So you, that's a camp romance.
Yeah.
That ended.
Don't send Sadie.
You just struck fear into my heart. So that's awesome. So y'all met at camp.
We met at camp and we waited. He lived about an hour away from where I did. So we had to wait for him to turn 16 and we kind of started dating.
Okay.
You know, like it was like a once a month you could drive your car and we would go to Plainview to the movies. It's like a dollar for a matinee at this point. Super awkward, right? Because I'm the 14-year-old that, and if I don't talk now and I sit in the corner now, I really didn't talk when I was 14.
You were an introvert. Yes.
So we would do an awkward date once a month to Plainview. Mm-hmm. We kind of took a break because it was just weird.
Yeah.
And then we started dating again about a year later. He was 2 years older. He went to college. We kind of broke up.
Yeah.
And then we started dating again. So back and forth for several years. And then we both decided to go to Tech together. So when I graduated and we started going to Tech,
that's when you knew.
I guess got serious got engaged. A year later, goodness, I think I was 19 when I got engaged, and we were married when I was 20.
Wow, that's awesome. But Amy and I too. Like she started kindergarten a year younger because they lived in California at the time, and she has October birthday, so she was younger than everybody in her class. But she was 19 when we got married. I was 21. She was about to start her junior year in college, and I was about to start my senior year in college. But yeah, we were babies, man. We were babies. I don't tell my kids that story very often.
I know. Does it terrify you that Carson's that age now?
She's 2 years older than Amy was when Amy got married. And I'm just like, what were we thinking? So, but yeah, sometimes that's the way the Lord does it. So how long? So you guys were together then for several years off and on before you got married.
Yep. And it'll be in about 3 weeks. It'll be our 15th.
Man,
anniversary. Yeah,
that's awesome. That's really awesome. So y'all, you got married while you were both still in college then.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so how was that? Was, you know,
well, I told you earlier I worked full time, he worked full time. We kind of competed as to who could get more hours in a week
while also doing school full-time.
Yes.
Yeah.
He had a much easier path, though. He did an advertising degree, and that was a lot harder than the chemistry. And
oh, my gosh. Yeah. All those classes. That's brutal. Like Carson, she was started out pre-med, so she had to take, like, organic chemistry and all that stuff. And it's really...
It's hard.
Legitimately tough. Yeah. Did you always know you wanted to be a pharmacist?
So I actually wanted to be an orthopedic surgeon. So in high school, I tore my ACL.
Yeah.
Playing basketball. And had two different surgeries for that. And I loved my orthopedic surgeon.
Yeah.
So I really thought I wanted to do that. When I came to Tech, I actually signed up to volunteer in her clinic.
Yeah.
And within like the first day, I was like, no, not for me. And really what it was, so her mom, she was Asian descent.
Uh-huh.
She had brought her mom over and her mom was helping raise her kids.
Yeah.
So at 5 o'clock, when you would normally be closing the clinic, her mom brought her kids up and she said, "Hey, love y'all. Did grandma feed y'all? Eat good. I'll see y'all tonight and put you to bed."
Wow.
And that was her whole interaction with her kids. And so that was actually where I was like, you know, I want to have a family. I want to be a mom and I don't want to be married to my job. I don't want to go through residency and wait for family. At that point, you know, Trey and I were pretty serious and I knew that just wasn't what I wanted. So
yeah. You didn't, because that's like, it's 7 years of, you know,
minimally, that's just, you know, med school, the residency training.
Oh yeah. That doesn't count like your specialties.
Undergrad. Right.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So I actually took a personality test. It was a requirement of a course that I was in and, accounting came up first is what the career I should pursue.
Okay.
And pharmacy was number two.
Yeah.
So interestingly enough, I've got a job now that marries the two.
The two. Yeah. So it's the perfect job for you. Yeah. That's awesome. That's awesome. So, okay. So thank you. Gosh, this time's just flown by. This is awesome. It's so wonderful to hear your story. But before we, before we kind of wrap things up, talk about, where are you guys right now? Like what do you feel like God is doing in your life right now? What's he teaching you?
talked a lot about community, and I feel just an overwhelming need to create community and make sure that people around us have community.
Right.
I'd mentioned that we got plugged into a life group.
Yeah.
During that semester, we had Reed.
Yeah.
And we're just loved on. You know, when we had Kinsley, we didn't have community. We were all, we had friends from pharmacy school.
Sure.
And we had friends, but we didn't have a church community.
Right.
And we had been plugged into life group and we had Reed, and it was a completely different experience.
Yeah.
And just with things I've experienced in my life, like we can't, I don't want to take anything I've been given for granted.
Right.
And so life group has been such a big part of bringing us back into the church, mm-hmm. and really helping us get plugged in.
Yeah.
And it's been phenomenal. On days that I've received bad news about Kinsley in school, it's amazing how the devil works. He's like, I'm going to bring you down.
Yeah.
And when he does it, you know, the perfect person calls at the right time, or right. we're having life group, and I am just 100% lifted back up out of these dark places.
Yeah.
So right now he's just doing a work within me, to just, pour myself kind of into life group. I think that's a really great ministry that our church has. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of where he's moving in my life right now, is just press on and make sure that we're including people that the people that don't feel community, find those people.
Yeah.
We pull them in.
I think that's the thing that we as a church are uniquely positioned to do in this community, right? There's a ton of places where people could go to church, right? You can drive just a few miles and be at a lot of different churches. But one of the awesome things that opportunities that we have for people in our town is that, you know, we can be that, like we're their neighbors, you know, we can, it's more than just us, you know, like you said, where you go to church and you kind of sneak in the back and you experience worship and then you go home. Like there's a whole lot more to Christian life and Christian community that's just so wonderful and life-giving. But the only way we have it is if we actually figure out how to engage, you know, and do life together with people. So I know there's people, a lot of people in our town and in our church even, who they're not taking that step. Like they've not really found ways to plug into a group and to really have a group of folks that they're doing life together with. And it's, I'm not just talking about your buddies. You know, it's good to have buddies. Buddies are great, right? But we need like Christian accountability. That's different, right? People right. who are seeking after the Lord and you're seeking after the Lord together. You know. That's different. That's a different kind of community, and we need that in our lives. And so, so thank you for sharing that. And if you're out there listening and you're looking for a place to plug in like that, we would love to help you with that. So there'd be a link to our church's website in the description of this podcast episode. You can also, you can email us, and contact us right off of the website. We would love to help you get hooked up. There's, you know, Denise and Trey have a great, you know, life group that meets at their house, but frankly, we need more groups like that. Honestly, we don't have enough groups to serve all the folks in our church who I know need to plug in someplace. And so we're actively working to try to figure out how do we do that? You know, how do we expand our reach and invite more people in the community like that? So anyway, thank you for sharing that. I think that's generally a need. You know, I've been listening to a lot of podcasts and a lot of you know, people just kind of talking about where we are right now in our culture. And the biggest thing I keep hearing over and over again is we've been through a couple of years now where community was really taken from people, you know? And so there's this period of time where, you know, we were isolated, we were alone, we, you know, unable to connect with people the way that we're used to connecting with people. And so, you know, it's created this kind of scenario where some of us even have trouble trusting and entering into relationships like that because we went through this period where that was kind of all, you know, you had the walls up, you had the barriers up, you were huddled together with your family and you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of loneliness out there right now, and there's a lot of need for community and for connection with people. And gosh, the church has got that. Like that's what we do, you know, when we're at our best. And these stories that you tell about the church that you grew up in, how they circled around you and how they supported you and how they loved you, how they had you in and out of their homes. And you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, and now you're getting to do that, right, with other folks. And you guys are getting to be that for people. And that's who we're supposed to be. you know, that's who we're supposed to be. So thank you for that challenge today. That's, we need to do it.
There's a lot of church that needs to be lived outside the four walls of this building.
Absolutely. The four walls of the building don't even matter. That's not even who we are. You know, a church is not a location. It's a group of people who are doing life together. That's what church is. And so that means that the overwhelming majority of what we do happens not in this building, you know, and that's important, you know, important for us to remember. So good reminder. Thank you, Denise, for that. And thank you for sharing your story. This was fun.
Yeah.
This,
thanks, Brad.
And just also, I would say that, like, I first started hearing a little bit of your story. I went to visit you in the hospital, right?
Yeah.
You had been very sick. You were in the hospital. And that's where I first started to hear about your story. But I remember you telling me, oh man, our life group's just been amazing. Our girl group's been amazing. They've been, you know, taking care of my kids and picking people up and bringing meals over. You know what I mean?
I mean, it was like easy text. You know, I'm headed to the ER. I'm headed to an ICU. Text somebody.
Yeah.
Everything in our life was taken care of.
Yeah.
And beyond, even beyond our life group, you know, we serve on the baptism team.
Yeah.
And we came home and... From the second, you know, the second hospital stay, I was in the ICU.
Right.
Suzanne Hamilton serves on the baptism team. She didn't even know I'd been back in the hospital. We had been home for 30 minutes and she brought us like 10 homemade pork chops and a buttermilk pie. Like, she didn't even know.
She didn't even
right?
know.
Like, God is at work doing things if you'll let him.
No doubt.
And we were taken care of by our life group and so many people beyond that.
Yeah. Yeah. What a blessing. And I remember thinking back then when you were in the hospital and you were talking to me about how things are working, I was like, yeah, that's who we are. You know, that's what church is supposed to be. So, that's good. And we, only way we can be that is people like you who are committed to being that, who want to be that and who are serious about it. That's great. All right. Thanks, Denise. Thanks for spending some time. Hope those of you who are listening out there were encouraged a little bit today. We didn't even get to, if you can believe this, we didn't even get to half of Denise's story. We're probably going to have her back on another podcast so she could share, because you got to talk about your relationship with your mom. We didn't get into that at all. And what that looked like, you know, when you were growing up and your maternal grandparents. I know you have a relationship with them. We didn't even talk about that.
Yeah, you even know. Got a cousin that lives in Shallower.
I know. All these crazy things that we didn't even get a chance to talk about. And so anyway, so we've got to do that. And we'll talk about that another time. But hopefully you've been encouraged by Denise's story. You're just a delightful person, Denise.
Thanks,
I love
Brad.
Being around you. I like hanging out with you. And Trey's okay, too. Yeah, I like him all right, too.
He's so. Really the better half.
Yeah. No, well, okay. It's good for you to say that. As a wife, it's good for you to say that. But Trey and I both know. Like, Trey will be the first one to tell me, no. Denise is the better half. So, all right. Well, thanks for joining us on the podcast. And you guys out there listening, hope you were encouraged today, and hope you were able to think a little bit about your own life and your own faith. And if there's any way that we at First Shallow Water can help you, please let us know. We want to do it. And make sure you tune in next week. We'll have another awesome guest on our podcast next week. And until then, we'll see you around town. Thanks for tuning in to First Things First. We want to invite you to join us for worship this Sunday at First Shallow Water. You can find us at 703 Avenue J in Shallow Water, Texas. Our Sunday morning service starts at 10:30 a.m. Click on the link in the description of this episode for more information about our church, or if you'd just like to reach out to us. Check out the previous episodes of this podcast. Make sure you do that. We really have had the privilege of hearing some amazing stories. And make sure you check back each week for a new episode. Until then, we'll see you around town.